And that is what I call the jaw drop moment. Now it's like, oh, really? And people say, I liked, I commented on that.
Welcome to the Redefining Sales podcast, where we unpack the future of sales together. We will bring you the very best experts who can help you to navigate the pathway forward and shortcut the way there, learning from their successes, their failures, and everything that they can unpack to help us to take our first steps. Now, before we get stuck into today's conversation, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel so that you never miss an episode. And also, if you love what you hear, leave us a review. That really helps us to spread the good word, attract even bigger and better guests who can help us all to navigate the pathway forward for the future of sales. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. My name's Abby White. I'm the CEO of Sales Redefined and your host for the Redefining Sales Podcast. Today, we have with us Tim Warren. And in this conversation, we are talking about all things AI and GPT, how you can be using it in your business, and how you can be leveraging it for sales. It is a truly mind-blowing and fascinating conversation that has got my brain running wild. Before we dive into the conversation, let me share with you a little bit about Tim and his background. So Tim is the CEO and co-founder of a company called Ambit, who started in 2017. Ambit automate customer service at scale with GPT and conversational AI. And honestly, when he talks about this and explains it, it's fascinating to see how we've gone from the days of really annoying and irritating chatbots where we're frustrated and we just want to speak to a human to actually being able to leverage the likes of AI, GPT technology to actually have a positive customer experience and be able to take that customer experience at scale in a cost-effective way. So it's quite mind-blowing. Ambit as a platform specialized in financial services, e-commerce, retail, telco, and utilities. And in terms of Tim's own background, he's a former executive at Goldman Sachs, JB Weir, and others. And he really loves connecting with people around the world. And at the end, leaves us with the offer to connect with him. So as I said, Ambit GPT is focused very much around automating customer service and experience, which actually helps save money and drive revenue. So we go into a lot of highly practical examples of how we can be leveraging AI today in our business, how we can be using it to drive a more positive customer experience. We talk about some of the efficiencies that come from that, some of the data that can be used from that. And we also, of course, finish up by talking about what are the first steps that we need to take. And Tim finishes with one of the best points that I think I've heard on one of our podcasts, which is if you do not do anything with this information in the next week, you've missed the boat. That is how fast-paced we are seeing AI and GPT technologies start to take over and come into our orbit. So really, it is about embracing and adopting the tools and technology right now. So with that, let's jump into our conversation with Tim. Welcome to the Redefining Sales Podcast. Tim, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Abby.
So I want to start with a little bit of background. I love understanding a founder's story, how you got here. So can you bring us up to speed a little bit on the journey with Ambit? How did it come to life? How did it come to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I started this in 2017, right around when I understand you started your company. So, you know what the grind has been like. So, in 2017, there was this discussion around what can AI do for people. Where is it going to be used? No one really knew. So, myself and my co-founders, we did some market research and we put a bunch of use cases in front of people. And we said, if we could do this kind of thing, would that be useful to you? And we went actively looking for what problems that we could solve. And the thing that constantly came up was, we've got a customer service problem. People are asking us a lot of questions and we just haven't got enough people to answer or to give them a good customer experience. So that was the core of where the idea came from. We didn't start any code until we understood what the idea, what the use case was going to be. So it was going to be customer service at scale and we were going to use AI to achieve it.
And in terms of that, how did you then come to bring the product to life? I'm so fascinated by the journey because it's such a beast of a project.
Yeah, look, it's a big thing, and of course, one of the benefits you've got when you start something is you don't know how hard it's going to be, and usually things are harder than you ever realize. And also, the world is changing very significantly as you do it, especially in a space like this. In fact, there's probably no area that's changing faster than AI at the moment. So, from the very outset, myself and my co-founders, we had pretty key areas that we were going to focus on. And we broke it down into putting all the corporate operations stuff together, the sales and the technology. So we ran like that for some time and we each hired as we needed to. But what we did at that time was we put in our own money, and it was money so that we could go out and hire developers, first up developers. So we hired two or three people and we had them working with us for about 3 or 4 months. And then we started getting out into the market saying this is the kind of thing that we could do. And before we knew it, we had people saying, actually, can I pay for that right now? So we launched in April 2017, and by September, we had two customers ready to go. So we had a lot of coming up to speed to do to get our team ready and hire people. We were hiring people into jobs that hadn't existed before. So it was a very interesting time.
Yes, I do love the startup journey. There's no, I don't think, I had loads of people warn me and try and sort of put me off. And you're like, yeah, it'll be fine. Honestly, like I'm really resilient. It'll be fine until you do it. I don't think anyone can probably explain it.
No, like anyone giving you advice who hasn't actually been through that journey, it's presented from that perspective of, hey, this is what I've heard or this is what I think. But until you really hear it from a startup founder, you don't really get it. That said, it's good. Nothing put us off, and here we are today. We're 6 years old now, so that's pretty
Yeah.
exciting.
So bring us up to speed on today in terms of Ambit and the platform. So obviously the intention was, okay, there's a real reoccurring problem that people are talking to us about with customer experience. How do we solve part of that problem, and the conversations that people are wanting to have and engage in at scale and using AI? Is that where now 2023 you have landed in terms of if I'm an Ambit customer, how am I using the platform today?
Yeah, your summary there kind of nailed it right. So it's that customer service at scale problem. This is not for what we call the long tail issue, where there's something really unusual has happened. A human's always going to be best at that. But if there's something that happens repetitively, and this is where we work with our customers to understand the data that they've got. And if we can say that 17% of all requests are about a lost password, we know that's a great place to start in terms of working out the right answers to be able to give chatters when they come in.
Okay, I have 1,000 questions on that that I
Yeah.
want to come to, but before I do, I want to
Yeah.
finish your story of coming to life. 6 years on, if you look at your journey, what do you think have been some of the best growth strategies for your business?
Yeah, so look, I took pages from a lot of other people's books on this. So I think sales strategies fundamentally haven't changed a lot, but how they're applied and the technology that you've got available has. So every early sale was literally someone I knew or someone one of my founders knew, and we'd go in at the top. And because we're a different and a new technology, we tend to have to go in a level higher than you'd normally expect. If you typically sell into a head of level, then with us, you're having to sell to a C-suite level. So that's what we did early on. Is there's that phrase that I've heard many times, and explicitly heard it from the founders of Airbnb, and they said early on, do the things that don't scale. So, Airbnb, the founders went along knocking on people's apartments saying, hey, do you want to rent it out when you're not here? Well, our equivalent of that was calling our networks. And it was, first you have to build trust in the person, then you build trust in the company and the product, and ultimately you get to this tipping point where you have to ask for that sale. I don't think those things have really changed in terms of an enterprise, but we are at a leading edge of technology. And so you're dealing with a much wider set of people at a more senior level. And if I compare it maybe back to email or cell phones coming into enterprise. I mean, it hasn't happened as fast as what's happened with us, but when email came out, I remember companies would say things like, "Oh, do you think we should try out this email thing?" And what do you know? 2 years later, their entire business is 100% dependent on it. But people were so tentative, and people really pushed, and they waited years with email to get into it until it became that expectation. The same with a website. So early on, people in those sales areas would have experienced some of the same things. And I've been selling for a while. I'm not naturally a salesperson. I'm actually a technologist. I'm a software developer originally. But when you have an idea, you do have to sell it yourself. And I think almost coming into this area of high speed, high level sales, where it's very much an enterprise sale where you might talk to 10 or 15 different influencers in that sale. It's not like the old, understand your buyer profile and create something for them. It doesn't really work like that. It's highly custom. So what I would say is in this area early on, it doesn't suit people that are that really require process. What it requires is adaptability. So you go out and you pitch in the morning and something falls flat and you think, well, I won't do that again. And then you try something different and that doesn't work. And you keep going until you get that first sale and you say, well, what was it that worked? How much of that was a fluke? And how much of it can I reproduce? And it's not until me as a founder that I can do a sale the same way I did the last one that I can actually teach it to someone else. So for the first year and a half, we had just founder sales. Then we brought on a BDM who was pretty cool, and she and I then did the sales for a couple of years. Now we've got a team. Now we've got a sales leader, we've got a GM of sales, we've got two BDMs, and we've got a partner manager. So we've expanded like that. But each step, I've had to dig into how do we template this? And sometimes I don't know, but because it needs to be found out, I'll be the one that goes into the situation where I can get it wrong. And I'll try and get it right. I'll get it wrong, but I'll get data from it. And when I can teach that to someone else, that's what I do. So, to give you an idea, now, 6 years in, I'm at the stage now where we've had a few sales go through where I'm not involved at all. And that pretty much started, I guess, last year we got to that point, and that's when I knew I could bring other people into the business.
I love that. And I think it has to almost be that way because if you look at, I think the latest statistic is that it takes when you hire a BDM 9 months for that person statistically to start adding value to your business. Now, most of us don't have 9 months, particularly in small business. And you go, well, how do you reduce that time of I hire a BDM, they're effective, they're selling, they can sell just as well as you can. Like, how do you reduce that time? And I think the only way to do it is what you've just said, which is how do you get what is in your head, what you've done the trial and error of, documented into a bit of a mini process, a mini cheat sheet, a mini sales playbook, so that they can replicate it. Because I think it's where a lot of, we hear a lot of people say, well, that salesperson's useless, get another one. Well, that one's useless, get another one. And they go through that process, and it's because they haven't been through what you just explained. Which I think is so important because otherwise any new hire has to play that guessing game that you just did, and it hasn't kind of almost been passed on. So I think that's so important, that journey, that evolution that you've just described as a successful way to set up a new salesperson for success.
Yeah, that's right. And picking up on a couple of those things there, I have found that this is a more technical sale than I probably gave it credit for. And I think I put it down to the fact that I'm originally a technologist. And so as a result, I didn't appreciate just how much tech language we had. And then we had another BDM came on and she did a really good job. And when we've brought on others, you forget how much quite deep, I'm not talking coding deep, but quite deep technical knowledge there is to understand. BDMs have choice. Now we've tried a range of different. Don't imagine that we just did the one thing and it worked, and then we hired people. It's not at all like that. It's like it's this kind of a journey, So we tried early on doing very much marketing out through web. Well, first off, it's what I call shoe leather sales, going and seeing people when you can't scale that enough. We tried an SDR service externally. That was okay. Set a couple of meetings, but it was very hard. it's not like consumer sales. When you're selling an enterprise and you work for a year on a $500,000 deal, it's very hard to call that data. Was it luck? Did they just like you more? It's very hard to quantify that. If you're selling 1,000 things at $50 a month, that's a very different sale, and you can use data. So, well, I think we found good people in the sales team over time. I don't know if we always got them at the right time for us. So if people come in and they've got that startup mentality of I can work stuff out, then yeah, they'll probably get there early on. I'm talking when you're before $1 million worth of revenue. Later on, you need to have some process, and when it's much larger, 10 million plus, you can probably have a lot of process and the playbooks and everything that are working. We're halfway through to playbooks, because we always find it's about half what the playbook tells us, and then we need some adaptability around it. Or a new buyer profile pops up and we think, well, we haven't worked out what they want, and we have to go back to the drawing board. So you would try many approaches, but what I would say early on, if I did this again, would be have something that is actually easier to bundle and explain for salespeople. I was able to explain the massive platform product that we had because I was there since it was born. But when you bring someone in, and you're right, you've got 9 months for them to come up to speed, which is a long time. If me as a founder, I'm funding it. Then what we want to do is accelerate them. And that is not a technical exercise. That really is a product marketing exercise, and it's the hardest thing to understand, really, product marketing. But finding something that can be willingly bought is really powerful, as opposed to something that can be sold. So if you can create a smaller, simpler, easier to sell product, and let people cut their teeth on that while they grow up to speed with the thing that genuinely makes you money, then I think that can be worthwhile. So I don't know quite how we would have done it, but that is something that we have introduced actually now, is a lower tier, which lets both salespeople and customers start a bit easier.
I like that. And it's almost the value ladder that we all see working so well. What's the entry point? What's the baby step? And then how do you then progress from there? So it's that entry point, I guess, into working with Ambit.
Yeah, it's just like that. And the way we, because I didn't really want to, I don't want to serve the lower end of the market. I really want to serve the top companies, the medium and the large companies. So the way the team got me across the line with this lower level product is they said, think of it like it's just a lead cost. So in the enterprise, if a lead costs you $1,000, then what if we spend that $1,000 on getting them into a low level product, and they're paying us a little bit of money, which solves the first proof point, which is, will they pay for anything at all? Because if they won't pay for anything, we don't want them as a customer. They're not a customer. So we now see this lower end, which we're calling the Ambit Web, as the entry level to the Ambit universe. And progressive disclosure of complexity, we then say, hey, now did you know that then there's all this goodness to come in? So hopefully we can run that part of the funnel as so it's full digital, and then salespeople can learn around that, and then they can have really qualified leads that they're selling the enterprise platform to.
I love that. And I think the stat I saw on this, sorry, I love my stats, was it's like if you can get someone to spend $1 with you or pay as a client, to your point, sometimes they're never going to pay, they're never going to be a client. But if you can even get them to spend a dollar, they are seven times more likely to go on to spend with you. So I really like what you've done there. I think it's an interesting way to go to get people, like you said, into the Ambit universe. So I want to flip us around a little bit from Ambit's journey, but now take us to how technology is coming into sales. Because one thing that I think is interesting is a few years ago, I would actually say there was quite little technology in sales. And I come from a background of being at IBM and the technology background, but the tech we had was really, CRMs, and that's kind of it. And I think that what I find fascinating now is when you look at what technology is coming into sales, there is heaps of it, and it's coming in really, really, really fast.
Second
So I
time.
guess as people are now probably in planning mode for FY24, what technology, or if you want to take an AI spin on that question, should people start to be thinking about in terms of an application for how you help drive sales?
Yeah, so look, I see it this way, and you're bang on. There's been kind of sales tooling, but really that has been focused around the process. And what we're talking about now is the ability for it to help in the content area. So I'll just give a couple of things, for example. So when we started developing this new GPT style technology about 18 months ago and realized how incredibly powerful it was going to be, I started generating my social feed all through the machine, right? Through the Ambit Clever Intelligence bot thing. I should come up with a better name for that. So I started doing it. And what I would do is I'd do a presentation. And then at the end of the presentation, I'd say, hey, I did a call out on LinkedIn here. And then I would show them the video of me generating that on AI and then posting it to social. And they would have interacted with it, not knowing that it wasn't me. And that is what I call the jaw drop moment. Now, it's like, oh, really? And people say, I commented on that. I said, yes, it was actually me that responded. So what does that mean? So that's meant that over last year, I would have put out maybe 100 items where I used AI to generate the content. Now, in a sales context, what does that mean? So you can put out some pretty insightful and useful things around whatever it is that you do and your chosen areas of thought leadership, but you can do it at high speed. So if it used to take you a half day to write a blog, most people don't really like writing. Well, now the writing bit's easy. What you need to do is you need to set it up for success, quite like a person. If you hire someone and you give them a good job description and a bunch of things and a handful of tasks to get done, they then go and do that work. Well, that's like AI. It can now generate that content. So if I think of the sales journey in an enterprise, for instance, or anyone in a partnership or a channel situation, all of that collateral that no one ever wants to put together, that can now be done very quickly. You say, here's the information about our product. Write me a one-page sales, piece about our product, promoting its benefits to customers in this particular area. Boom, that's done. Well, then you go to another tool, Midjourney or something like that, and you say, create some suitable corporate graphics for this thing doing that. That's done as well. So now it comes to a different thing. You don't actually have to grind through the process creation, but you have to think of how do I set it up for success. So in a sales environment, I have seen, I don't know if you've seen the demo of the tool that HubSpot is bringing out soon. You've got to watch that. And I recommend that anyone on here, I don't know if you're sponsored by a CRM, but HubSpot's got the jump on this. So what HubSpot's got is, now I don't necessarily know this is the right thing to do from a security or privacy perspective, but bear with me here. So we'll talk about that later. But you upload essentially everything that's in HubSpot into their fancy AI cloud. And then it tells you what to do and when, and it creates those emails and writes them in a custom manner. So it'll say, now when you bought that thing from us 7 months ago, we've noticed that you've had an X, Y, and Z improvement. It can write all of this. So the question, if you think of people, process and technology it's structure and process and resource, then AI can, we've already had tools like CRMs to give us structure, which is, you know, meetings and emails and phone calls and, you know, just recording stuff. It doesn't really actually do much for you. A little bit of marketing automation. But then you get through to the fact where it can actually create the content that can be automated. That's getting pretty sensational. Then you get to the stage, well, if a human's currently doing this component, what components of that can I automate? And so you take steadily taking out components of that resource. Now, just a couple of numbers. So if we look at a typical blog post that might take 2 to 3 hours to write, that would now come down to 10 minutes with 10 minutes working on your prompt to get a good article, instant generation of an article, call it 10 seconds, and then 20 minutes editing time. So you could turn 3 to 4 hours, you could turn that into 40 minutes. And that's a conservative estimate. just on a single blog post. Now, say that was a longer item, like a case study. The longer the item, the harder it is for humans to integrate that. So it just takes longer. So a five-page thing is going to take 5 or 6 times as long as a one-page. Not for a machine, though. So it doesn't really take significantly longer to create it. It'll take the human a little bit longer to edit it. So in a sales context, all of those things that you're creating, instead of moving from templated things, you can now have personalized for everyone. And I think that's sensational.
Yeah, oh, I'm addicted at the moment to ChatGPT. I'm not finding much that ChatGPT can't do. And exactly what you said, my experience at the moment is, it's like rubbish in, rubbish out, right? If I've just put write me a blog on the future of sales, well, it's going to be pretty generic versus if I say speak to these key points, use this tone of voice, or whatever else it might be in terms of instructions. And I agree with your point as well of it's not just a copy paste, it's also then how do you edit it and how do you sort of tweak and refine it. But it's taken a huge portion of the work. And I think for sales, it's interesting because, we know now in sales, it is about how do you personalize the experience? It can't be generic. So to your point, you've got to personalize. We do know that sales have got to create, the 15 touch points across the 11 plus stakeholders. You need the content at the right stage at the right point in time. So I think all of this technology is now really helping. And for me, I see some of the opportunity as how do we as sales professionals learn to work with it rather than against it? And that's where I think it's interesting as we move towards more data-driven selling as opposed to the intuition-based selling. And I think it's kind of learning how we embrace it and not be fearful of it that it's going to take my job. It's not, it's going to make you a hell of a lot more efficient.
And I guess on that is you need to be. I challenged the leadership team. I think it was back in January. I said, if we're not using GPT daily in our jobs, then we won't have jobs. So I think there is a. I think the humans are smart. We adapt quickly, and that's one of the particularly successful things about us as a species. We do adapt. If you've got people who won't, they will be challenged. And those intuitive sellers, and I know because I'm one, right? But I see people that I then hire who follow some structure and some process doing a better job. I've been the one who's been not afraid to, walk around and try it out. But when I've got a method, I can teach it to someone else and they can outsell me. So that's good. However, especially with people who have teams, and I think that some of the particular advantages lie with larger organizations here. If you've got enough people that you've got a full sales team, a team of 4 or 5 people with comparable jobs, then you can start to use AI to understand the successful attributes of them, but not only use that to teach, but use it to replicate what they're doing. So you might find, for instance, if you find that you can automate a demo, and I've seen some interesting automated demos where you log into a demo at a particular time and then it's got a talkover, and then all they've got is if you've got questions, you type it and you've got someone just running the chat on the demo. So it feels personalized. Now you can do a personalized version of that. So all of those tools are very much coming.
So I want to talk to you about this because I think that if I take Amber as the example, right? When go back several years, we talked about chatbots on websites or chatbots being used and so on. I think initially everyone associated it with quite a negative experience because you'd be like, I just want to talk to a human. I know when I used to try and talk to, won't say the name, my current phone provider on a chatbot, you're like, ah, you're killing me. So I'm really curious around how you overcome that. And so therefore how you are creating, go back to your purpose, right? You're creating epic customer experience, but at scale in a cost-effective way. How do you overcome that barrier where historically we associated it with, oh God, it's just a generic chatbot. It's not epic customer experience. Do you get where I'm going with that? That was a poorly worded question.
Totally. Look,
Where I'm going.
we were selling into this where when we first launched, and we launched as a fairly comprehensive platform, but the things that have been around just before us were pretty disappointing experiences. And while I applaud I applaud organizations for giving things a go. They probably put out things that, looking back on it, they would have waited until they could have done something a bit better. And we often have this experience where people would say, "Oh, we're done about chatbots," and we'd say, "Well, try one of ours," and they'd try it, and they'd say, "Oh, actually, that's quite good." And what you find is that the negative experiences tend to float to the top. But when people have a successful experience with automation, you don't hear from them. They just use automation next time. So you kind of never get the positive experiences coming through until you get to measure them by volume. Now, when you do that, so we can do explicit, and we're currently working on deriving implicit CSAT out of the channel. So your customer satisfaction through the channel without asking them questions. As soon as you ask someone a question, it changes their perception. But if you can see we got a positive outcome, and they said these kind of things, and they didn't use too many capitals and that kind of thing, we can derive how they're feeling. You're starting to understand if it's a successful journey. And we find with almost all of our customers have a really good run with that, but you'll still get someone who isn't happy, who ends up jumping on social media or the phone or something like that to complain about it. So part of that is education. And if we relate it back to the phone or email. So I remember people would say, "Oh, you know what? I sent off an email and I've never heard anything back." And then it turns out they haven't put the address in properly. Well, but they're blaming email, they're blaming the system. And yeah, early deliverers of chatbots did a relatively poor job. And we have had a reasonable amount of success taking people who've used some of those big platforms that you might have heard of where they haven't delivered a very good customer experience and replacing it with someone that does something that does deliver a good customer experience. And then they come on and then they enjoy it. I will tell you the single most important thing to getting value or perceived value out of a chatbot is having sufficient volume. So if people are very low volume, if you're only getting 20 customer inquiries a day, you probably don't need a chatbot. You could have one, but you need volume for a couple of things: to deliver the value and also to train. And if you don't have that volume, then it's hard to do a great job at those things. But then the derived value as companies get larger becomes higher. It's a very satisfying thing to sell from that perspective, because if we're dealing with something really large like Australia Post or Telstra, then they have an incredibly powerful use case. And if it solves 1%, that's two jobs, right? It pays for itself pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's massive. So we've been talking about customer experience. Obviously, that's the whole purpose here. And what I love about where I feel we're at, just my lens of the world, is I think that customer experience used to be considered, oh, that's nice. You know, it was almost like fluffy and like, oh, we should focus on our customer experience. And I love the fact that now it's a non-negotiable. You know, businesses who are investing in customer experience are seeing an ROI. We're starting to see customer experience officers and whole entire dedicated roles emerge. I'm curious from your lens as, you know, a business that specializes in this space around, you know, ensuring there is epic customer experience. What's the direct correlation that you're seeing or are you seeing with sales and customer experience?
It's an interesting point, this. Every organization is so different, and some people are very, very backwards thinking, and some people are incredibly progressive, and it's not always where you'd expect. So, one of the great companies that I've worked with is a power company, and they're so forward-looking. And what I saw happening in kind of 2018, 2019 was the creation of customer experience as a, it's not just a nice to have. It's not like, 10 years before people said, "Oh, maybe we should do some sustainability stuff and recycle something," you know? Well, now sustainability works when everyone is thinking in, from that angle. You know what? We need to look after this planet we've got, and we need to recycle these and our paper, and maybe source something in a, with a good supply chain. So it's across everyone. That's when it can be successful. Customer experience, I think, went from being the where you used to have one person set aside, "Oh, you do the customer experience stuff," and then everyone would ignore them when it mattered, to now you have, like you said, customer experience officers, you have a customer experience team. At first, they were a pod created at the side. Now they tend to be integrated into an organization. So we don't have a head of customer service, we have a head of customer experience. And that customer experience goes from when we are first demoing to them, through on, you know, bringing them through a sale, onboarding them, and looking after them throughout the life of that customer contract, which hopefully goes for a long time. So I saw it flip inside out, whereas instead of being something off to the side, it was the main thing that you do. And I heard something great at a conference in 2019 saying, talking about how customer experience really is everything that you do. It's everything. And within that, you have some technology things, and you have some direct service things, and you have some service, you have some product, you have some sales, but everyone is contributing to this overall delivering an outrageously good outcome. And who does that best? Apple, right? So they everything you get a new product, and you just that unboxing joy that you feel, it's like peeling that thing off, and then it wakes up and it says, "Hi, I see you've got a new phone. Shall I move everything to this one?" And you say, "Yes," and it's done. And they get the customer because now I've used their the biggest company in the world. They don't need me. But that's the way they generate it. And I've seen retail, which retail was heavily transactional 10 years ago. Companies now, and I think Instagram and TikTok have been a really strong mover in here. They're letting companies understand that if you give people a great experience through that, then they become a customer again. They move from being a customer really to a client. You're a fashion client of a fashion label, right? So, and you've virtually got that subscription and, you know, kind of revenue. The best time to sell something to someone is when they come to you for post-sales support. So you say, "I'll tell you what, you know, I'm sorry you've had that problem and you need to swap that over. I'll tell you what, we're going to send you one out for free. Did you know we've got a special on this thing at the moment?" That's when people are likely to buy. Like you said, you get that first dollar and they think, "Oh, I trust these people enough. Okay, I'll do it again."
Oh, I love it. So, one question I do want to ask you though is there's been an interesting thing in the media, love and hate the media, right? But there's an interesting piece at the moment around, oh my gosh, we're going too fast with some of this technology. And you got the likes of, I think it was Elon Musk and co going, hang on a sec, we need 6 months to actually catch up with how fast this is all advancing. You know, ChatGPT has made us all go wild. You know, AI is coming in like the speed of light and slow down. And do we slow down? So I'm really curious, sort of, to ask you about that of the balance of we need to embrace technology, we do, and we can make it more efficient. As you said, if, even if that's a couple heads, that potentially helps out of, you know, your Telstra example, that's a significant cost saving. Or if it's the better customer experience that gives you the better NPS score and the growth. But I guess what I'm trying to sort of say is how do you balance embracing technology, but also not going so fast where there's those that are nervous and fearful of the technology. I feel like we're at just this weird predicament at the moment. And when you've got Elon Musk telling him to slow down, it's creating an interesting conversation in the market. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, look, it's always important to listen to what people are saying in the space because they can set the mood. Do I think it's going outrageously fast? Yeah, I've never seen anything like it. And I was around when the internet went from black and white to color, you know. So I've had a few years in it, and this is going way quicker. And I think it will have an absolutely enormous impact on our whole economy, the way everything and almost every job works. But that said, you know, do we need to be cautious of it? Yes, but it's going to happen. So it's going to happen anyway. I thought there was longer, you know, because we had access to tools like this over the last couple of years, and it was kind of like this the secret club who had access to things like this. And then what do you know? OpenAI goes and drops ChatGPT to the world. It becomes the fastest adopted piece of technology ever. So I strongly believe that people need to get ahead of it. So they need to be using it, you know, like you're saying, you love it, use it all the time. People in any kind of a content role need to be using it every day, all day. And there's many tools. This is just one. ChatGPT is just one. They need to be using it all day, every day to understand how it's changing. So One of the things we do is we prepare an AI GPT readiness checklist. And the idea here is that if you're sitting at the top table, it just gives you a very basic, we're talking a couple of pages, examples of how to kick things off, what you need to do to move forward with a level of confidence. If this is not being discussed at the board and exec level on a regular occasion, and I'm talking monthly, because that's how fast it's changing, then you're behind. And I can guarantee you're behind because we're well ahead and we've seen what's happening with our companies, with our direct customers who are large retailers and utilities. They've been having these discussions for some time. So we really encourage people to reach out to trusted partners. So you reach out to, the people that you work with. Remember, in this area, there are so much is changing so fast that there may be people around who've been working in this area for 6 months, who've got a really good understanding of it, but that company you've been working with in the background for 10 years, they may not if they're not ahead of it. So it's a very confusing time for people, especially if they're not in technology, because it's going to affect them. So our recommendation is that people in technology and operations and risk need to get right ahead of it and make sure it's discussed at that exec and that top table.
Yeah, that's a really good. And you and I were talking before we started recording about the urgency and the speed about this. And to your point there, it's not, at the next annual meeting or the next quarterly meeting. It's kind of like now.
No, I mean, if you listen to this and you're not having this discussion within a week, you've kind of dropped the ball. This is changing so fast.
And I know even in our business as a small business, we're going, oh my gosh, how do we embrace all of these tools, technologies, AI, GPT, how do we embrace it? And it is forcing us all to sit up and rethink. It really is.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where if people start to use it in their everyday jobs, they get a little bit of a sense of it. But you want to think of it, it's not just that this is a threat, right? There's plenty of opportunities because we know that when people get great customer service through a sale process, their basket size increases, right? And their likelihood of buying again from you in an automated way increases. So if you do this and bring it back to that customer service, if you understand how AI automation can help you sell, you can do a better job for your customers and they will do a better job for you by buying more often. So there's just as much to gain from it as the risks around it. It's just that I would say that there's a few more zeros thrown on both sides of the equation at the moment.
Yeah. And I think we have to, if you look at, the buyer preferences as well. I think the last I read, something like 44% of millennials want a seller-free experience. It doesn't mean as a sales professional we all need to go, oh no, we don't have a job, but it's kind of embracing it. Chief sales officers are not just responsible for sales people, it's sales channels. So I do think there's a really interesting time there now about, like you said, it's not a threat, it's an opportunity to embrace.
Absolutely, yeah. Again, get in ahead of it, and then you're not playing chase up. You're not playing chase. You're able to deliver things, and just maybe your competition are working on this. And I've said this to someone who runs a very large consulting company. It's a global brand, and in their local office, they said, "Oh, we're worried that at some stage our people are going to start using this ChatGPT tool." And I said, "No, it's already happening." He said, "How do you know that?" I said, "Because everyone's using it. Everyone." He said, "Oh, I haven't used it." I said, "Well, that's the risk." So I said, "Go chat to your IT team, get them to pull some logs of these two domains." And we chatted a couple of days later. He's like, "Oh, it's been used thousands of times." Thousands. And
And I
that was
find
back in February.
oh wow. And now it's just everyone. I mean, everyone I speak to, even outside of work, it's pe kids are using it to do their homework and then putting it through plagiarism software. It's just sort of, most people are starting to jump on board and look at their own user cases.
Oh, it's quite incredible. Like I said, I've never seen anything like it. And even though we've built this thing, for our purpose, I still struggle to believe just how good it is. And you're right, if you rubbish in, rubbish out, but if you give it something really good quality, it does a stunning job, doesn't it?
It does. So I have to ask you, before I let you go, I do have to ask you around data. You've several times talked about actually, if you've only got, for example, so if we take Ambit as the example, if you today are using a chatbot or you're getting questions in and you've got really low volume, you're not going to get enough data to then learn from it. And you've referenced data several times, and I'm fascinated about how we're now using data better to take more of a data-driven sales approach. Can you talk to us about your lens? What are you seeing there in terms of the data people are getting from using Ambit? How are they using that to improve experience, grow revenue, and so on? What are sort of some practical examples?
Yeah, so I guess the best example would be seeing what people actually ask and how they ask for help. And people ask for help in very different ways. And if you've got a lot of volume, say you've got hundreds of people a day asking questions, you get data about what's critical to people. And I'll give you a very realistic example. With one customer, they are an electronics reseller. They know that around the release of an iPhone, a new version of an iPhone, they get a big pickup in traffic to their chatbot. In fact, they've got to the stage where they can see what things should be presented in what order based on when people are asking about it. And I'll tell you, going back to COVID, I know we don't want to remember that, but we started hearing about COVID questions so early through the chat. Because you've got tens of thousands of people from all different areas, and it's an area of uncertainty, so they stick it in the thing that might know. Now, early on, it didn't know, but when we were able to identify that, you know what, there's an ongoing inquiry here, we built a COVID response bot, and we gave all of the content to all of our customers so they could handle it. And we said, hey, look, you're going to need some answers here, here, and here, but otherwise it's good to go. So that's a very realistic example. And in the sales side of thing on that iPhone side, you can tell seasonality of products even within the day. So you can see that people are inquiring about these kind of devices at this particular time. Now, in the situation where you let them go out of a chat, maybe wander into a store or go back online shopping, you might have missed that kind of hunger window to have to solve that sale opportunity. But when you can say, hey, would you like to consider buying that iPhone 14 or would you like to consider some others, you're right there in that same channel. Now you can scale that up to any size. Well, I'm not suggesting that people are going to buy a car through a chatbot. But if they're clearly doing their research, remember in the GPT world, you can do some pretty amazing research just by asking questions. You can ask something like, give me a car buying checklist for a family of four people who do occasional out of town trips. Boom, it's going to give you something pretty comprehensive in terms of what and how to buy. That's the kind of thing that people are going to be asking a car dealership. And that's the kind of thing that if you've got a solution that can respond to that, then it is fundamentally going to change sales. What is it going to do? I'd like to bring you back to an example of a word for a thing. It used to be a word for a job. The word computer used to be spelt O-R, computer, and it used to be the name of a person who was very good at maths. And if you had a problem, you would go to the computer and give them your problem and they would work it out and they would hand it back to you. And when computers came along, they realized you don't have to give it to a person anymore. You just kind of type it in and get that back. And that's where the word computer came from. So is it going to
I
change
did
your
not
job?
know that.
Yes. Yeah,
That is.
a fabulous movie to watch is Hidden Figures about
Yes, I like that movie.
you know that one? Yeah, the African American women hidden away in the back of NASA who could do maths better than anyone else.
Yeah, I do like that film. I love that film. So I kind of want to wrap up with a question around where do we get started, right? If someone is sitting, listening to this podcast, and going, oh my God, to your point, if I don't do something about this within a week, then I've kind of missed the memo. But by the same token, this conversation can feel very overwhelming, and very daunting. What are the first steps? Where do we start?
Yeah, well, that's one of the reasons we created this GPT and AI readiness checklist. So, for a first case, if people don't know where to start from an enterprise approach, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find. Send me a message, connect and send me a message, and I'll send you this list. Talk to the key people in the organization would be involved in risk and AI. So a chief operating officer, chief risk officer, and those will be some of the core roles. They need to be in a smaller company. It's likely to be the CEO who's going to be finding out about this early on, and they will quickly need to pass it over to someone who's going to own it as a long-term risk. In time, larger organizations will have heads of AI. Even if they're not directly using it, they need to understand the impact. And it's a little bit like in financial services, you have people in a compliance department. In financial services, I would task heads of legal and compliance with learning about what needs to be done at a governance level. So if you put something in at a governance level, so it needs to be on a it needs to be on a risk matrix, it needs to be something that's regularly understood, need to be developing policies about it, and then you need to assign it into an operational area of the business. So it's not just checked up on once every 6 months, but you've got someone on it a bit more often than that. That's where you get started.
Amazing. Can we grab the link to the checklist and maybe put it in the show notes if that's
Yeah,
available?
I'll absolutely, yeah, I'll send it through after this.
Amazing. Look, Tim, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Absolutely love this conversation. My brain is now going wild with ideas. So thank you
Right.
so much for your time.
Okay, no, thank you.
Before you leave us, doors have officially opened for our next intake of RevUp. Doors will be closing on the 30th of June. Now, if you have not heard about RevUp, this is our new revenue enablement where your revenue generating teams will all come together to learn from leading experts. The experts that we have lined up to teach the RevUp system are absolutely incredible. We have LinkedIn teaching social selling. We have Julie Masters teaching influence. We have Maz Farrelly, whose content has had 8 billion views, teaching us about storytelling and standing out from the crowd. We have Jay Pottinger teaching us about productivity and many more. We will go through the entire journey of how do you rev up your sales aligned to these leading experts. So if you want to check out RevUp before the doors close on the 30th of June, then simply click the link in our show notes and visit member.salesredefined.com.au, and you can find out all the details you need to know, or you can book in for a chat. We love to have a chat to see whether it's the right fit for your revenue generating teams.